everyone. Welcome to the Cultivate Podcast for the Grove Church. I'm Charlie Lofton, the lead pastor there. And so thank you so much for joining us. And we have with us as our special guest, Mark Freeman, expert on spirituality, just personal faith, life in general, life coach, life guru.
So what are you an expert in?
Dude, I'm an expert in complimenting you in your areas of expertise. That's what I'm good at. I'm an expert at hosting Mark on a podcast. Hey, we really are glad that you're joining us. And we are now, this is episode 2 in a series where we are asking and answering, or trying to answer anyway, some big picture questions. And that kind of goes along with a sermon series that we did in March leading up to Easter. And we spent some time in the first episode, we were talking about, does God exist? And why do we believe God exists? And we spent most of that time not answering it the way that most podcasts, apologetics, books, articles, blogs, videos, or whatever would answer the question with academic arguments, but rather than around personal stories. And for you, man, we talked about it, that's almost like exclusively for you. When you think about why God exists, you're thinking personal stories, right?
Yeah, I've seen it. I felt it. I've experienced it.
Right, and that's how you would persuade someone too.
Yeah,
you know, you're not gonna try to dazzle them with your philosophical arguments. You're just gonna talk about, hey, I met him once, and I talked to him, and he's everything to me.
Yeah,
and honestly, if I were going to give advice to people, I think that's where I'd tell them to land. When people are really asking the question, "Is God real? Is he personal? Can I know him?" They're not looking for an academic answer to that question. And I would honestly say that most, what we would call apologetics, kind of this understanding of kind of the deep questions that people ask and how to answer them, they really are less, I think, about persuading the unbeliever and more about
affirming to the
strengthening the believer.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would totally agree, and just because of that belief, I also just have a lot of confidence that if he is very personal, if this God is very personal, that he has been in pursuit of that person, and so I know that he has revealed himself to them as well, and maybe ways that they missed or ways that they are kind of pushing away. I believe that he is, it's not unique to me, but that he is also revealing himself to somebody else. And so there's, because of that belief, there's just a confidence that I have that it's more just helping them navigate and look at their own story and see how incredible he is. You know, we walk through our days and miss most of the things in creation that God has done. The oxygen that we breathe in the moment, the fact that gravity exists. And so there are, beyond that, there are also things personal to us in our life that if we're not looking for it, if we're not aware, if we're trying to busy ourselves and miss it, we will. But if you stop for a second, you know, that's where a lot of Eastern thought and mysticism and spirituality is. It leans, forces us, it encourages us to be still for a moment, because when we get still for a moment, then you do start to go, oh,
that's good.
There's more here than just, you know, my to-do list today.
Yeah. And we're going to end up making more episodes. I think that's why in Western developed nations, there are more quote atheists, because they are outrunning the questions that
100%.
that are burning their soul.
Right.
I've got these deep soul level questions that are just burning, but if I can outrun them with busyness and productivity and escape silence, then I don't have to ask and answer them. But the same way a lot of people certainly in the West grieve that way too. They don't have time to be sad. I don't have time to process. I don't have time to, I'm not going to go to counseling. Am I going to heal from my past? I don't have time because I've got a client meeting. I've got a, I've got this schedule. I got so many hours. I got to work, and I got to do this, and I got to do this, and I got to do this, and that can lead you to a functional atheism. But if you stopped, that's really good. I like that. Yes, I may come back. We may have to come back to that.
It's the reason why, you know, everybody
always asks.
Being spiritual
in a secular world.
Why are these other places so spiritual and we don't see those kinds of things here?
Mm.
Well, we don't. Where in your schedule does it fit, you know?
If only we had a producer who could, like, right now on her phone make a note for a podcast series called Being Spiritual in a Secular World.
Mm.
Wait! We got it right here. We got Abigail.
On it.
We got Abigail. All right, so I don't want to under-promise and not deliver, over-promise and under-deliver. All right, so there are all these. I don't know if you ever heard any of these philosophical arguments for the existence of God. You ever heard any of these? Okay. So there are quite a few of them out there, and I've kind of got here four of them, and we're gonna talk about them. I give it the basics to you, and then we'll talk about it. The first one is my least favorite. Spoiler alert. It is called the ontological argument.
Mm.
You like that word? Ontological?
I do.
All right. So let's define what God is. God is a being that encapsulates all good things perfectly. All the good qualities one can have, God has them perfectly. That's God by definition. Existence is a good thing. So God, by definition, must exist. Because God, by definition, has all good qualities. Existence is a good quality. Not existing is a bad quality. Existing is a good quality. So God must have that quality. Therefore, God must exist.
That one really stinks.
It really does stink. But I'm telling you, man, the philosophers love it. I love it.
So, but it seems broken at the beginning because you defined what God was. So where did the definition come from? That he's only good.
Well, this is
or all things are good or God. I'm just curious.
I can't help you there. I mean, obviously, okay. I could try if I wanted to. You're imagining something into existence. You are creating a definition. Because then by that definition, the devil wouldn't exist.
Anything, yeah.
What is the devil? He is the incorporation of all bad qualities. Non-existence is a bad quality.
Yeah, if you go that route, the problem of evil really does cause you
some
troubles.
You can't fast forward ahead too quickly. Mm. Problem of evil, that's coming up. But that's not what I'm talking about. So, all right. So, probably the most popular one is everything that exists. Everything, you know, every effect, everything that you see, everything you experience has something that caused it. The couch that you're sitting on, how did it get there? Well, somebody put it there. Well, where did the couch come from? Well, it came from some furniture store. How did it get there? And you follow it all the way back to, you know, the putting of the couch together, the bringing in of the raw materials for it. Where did the raw materials come from? They came ultimately, they were either manufactured in a lab or they were, you know, if they're natural, they were mined in some way or they were grown, harvested or some way. Where did that come from? You went all the way back. Every effect has a cause. And so at some point, the universe came into existence. What caused it? Something must have caused it. You can't say there cannot be this huge effect, call it the Big Bang, if you will, that the Big Bang happened for no reason. So to believe that there is no God, you have to believe that all of the energy that existed to create the universe and it exploding into the Big Bang, all of that happened. That is the example of something happening for no reason and something coming from nowhere. And so if every effect has a cause and the biggest effect is the universe, it implies or really necessitates that something caused it. And we may not know, we may not be able to glean much about it, but we just call that cause, we call it God. Mm-hmm. How you feel about that one?
I mean, it's that one's pretty convincing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just difficult to look at something with order and to think that that order came from chaos. We just, I don't have any other examples of that.
Right.
Ever. And to be this intricate and ordered, it seems like there has to be anything. Anytime you see something made, you go, oh, there must be a maker.
Right.
Created, there must be a creator. So why would I look at this and think anything different?
So the argument that is made against it, if we are going to pick apart our own argument, would be, okay, if the universe was caused by God, then what made God? If the universe has to have a maker, because every effect has a cause, then what made God?
Which means then you would go to what whatever made God, then what made that thing?
Right.
What made that? I mean, it's,
and so eventually you ultimately are ending into a repeating cycle of something that is just kind of, we cannot find the first cause. We kind of keep going back, or something must be eternal. And so an atheist would say, well, we're just going to stop one step sooner and say that the universe is eternal. Which, if that's what you want to say, then okay, but that is not a scientific statement. That is a metaphysical statement on par with, you know, something is in existence that has always been in existence. It might as well be the universe. It might as well be the energy. Like, I mean, that's, again, it's something. It's something. But it is not, it does, that is not a, that's not a, it's not a scientific statement. And so I think the simplest answer to that is that there is in fact an eternal being that exists that could create this that is bigger than what we are. But I guess I understand why you could go one shorter. But to me,
you went scientific on us.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say that's not a scientific statement,
well, that's
expound
what,
on that a minute.
An atheist, you know, say we don't need God. Science explains everything. You know, evolution explains how life, all the diversity we have, the moment in the primordial soup, this one moment of abiogenesis explains how life came to be. Time and energy and explosion and all of these things help us understand how the universe came together. The Big Bang tells us where all this even came from. And so science can explain everything to us. We don't need God. But you need God at the point in which you need something to say.
If you go back.
But how did the Big Bang happen? How did a seemingly infinite amount of energy exist in zero space at no time? So all the energy that was required to create and make the universe existed. Where did it exist? It existed nowhere because space didn't exist. When did it exist? It existed no time. At no time, nowhere, an infinite amount of energy existed and exploded all on its own. Now that is not a scientific statement.
Right.
So science can't explain that. But they're like, well, I don't know, but at 0.00000001 second after the universe started, science can take over. So science can explain everything, except the biggest question, which is why. Why though? Why? And if you can't answer the biggest question, then you're kind of out of your league answering those kind of next level questions. All you're able to answer is you have some answers to how questions, but the real questions of why, it's just inadequate. Well, the universe has just always existed. Okay. Energy has always existed and exploded for no reason at no time and nowhere. Okay. I understand that really smart, sincere people believe that. But again, it is not a scientific statement. It is at best a philosophical statement. And really, honestly, it's a theological statement.
Yeah, so I don't mean to take us off target here, but so which one requires the most faith? We're talking about believing in something that we that we haven't seen.
I would say the one that requires the most faith is the one that explains the way things are the worst or the least. You know, as you think about the way the world is, and we're going to spend some time talking about this, why is the world this way instead of this? Why is it this way instead of that way? Why is it this instead of this? Like, as we start to ask big picture why questions about why is the world broken the way that it is? Why are people the way that they are? Why, like we talked about in the last episode, why do we have this thing in us? How did self-awareness evolve? How did kind of metaphysical yearnings to understand the very nature of the universe and who we are and our place in it, how did that evolve? Why did it evolve? Why is there such a big difference in the way that we approach the world versus the way every other created being in the world approaches its own world and environment?
Mm-hmm.
Where did that come from? Where does love come from? These sorts of things, like, why is the universe this way? And obviously, I believe that a theistic Christian worldview explains the nature of this universe better than accident. But as far as we're just asking the early question, why everything came from nothing for no reason versus everything came from something bigger than what it is.
It seems to make more sense.
To me, it does.
So in the argument, if somebody's like, well, I mean, the different religions and belief systems that believe that there is a God and that he created things are just weak intellectual answers to these really, really difficult questions. So what's your response to, like, yeah, of course they're clear answers because they're, you know, a weak intellectual people, early civilizations trying to put things together. And so they're like, oh yeah, it rains, so God must be crying, you know, like whatever that, you know, okay, these are the answers.
There's a phrase for that. It's called God of the gaps, which is we have a certain amount of understanding of the universe. There's certain things about the universe that we can understand, and there's certain parts of the universe that we can't or currently don't understand. And we put God in the gaps. In the gaps of our knowledge, we put God. And so the better our science is, the fewer and smaller the gaps are. And so then the smaller the need for God is. And I reject the idea of God of the gaps. I mean, I don't believe in a God of the gaps. I don't believe in a God who only explains things that we don't understand. I believe God explains the things we do understand. I believe God is greater than all of it. I think God stands above and beyond all of it. And it's not just simply, he's not the God of the gaps, but he is the God that created the rules that we do think we understand. He is, and so this is a similar one, and you kind of touched on it, so I kind of put on it too. Different than the cause and effect argument for God is the design argument, which is the level of design and the meticulousness of the way that the universe works, the rules that are involved in the universe, the depths to which, you know, the complexity of your body, the way that it works. And you kind of get into individual organs, or you get into individual cells, or the way that physics works. It's like it implies a designer that it could not have been. Wow, I mean, not only did we get really fortunate that the universe exists, but that really complex design,
so fortunate,
came into being. That if you would imagine that there was an infinite amount of energy that existed and just exploded, you would imagine that it would just be nothing but chaos forever. That it would not be able to create the amount of order that it does to the level that it does, to the meticulousness of the design. And so this is very often referred to as the watchmaker argument. If you were digging in your backyard and you found a watch, you would immediately believe, because somebody built this watch. This watch was built. You'd be like, man, wow, it's pretty cool this thing sprouted in my backyard. Or that somehow it just kind of formed itself over time. A watch implies a watchmaker. And a universe designed this complexly implies a designer. And so those two arguments kind of go hand in hand. The argument, it's called the argument by design, and the cause and effect, the first cause argument. But they both kind of go together. Like I look around and I'm like, something had to make this, because things don't make themselves. And if things were to explode by accident, they wouldn't be this meticulously designed. Explosions don't create things. Explosions destroy things. And they certainly don't create things as complex as a watch. You don't explode a metal factory and expect a watch to emerge from it. A watch isn't going to emerge from an explosion. It is going to form from meticulous design from a designer. What do you think about that? I mean, that's kind of a similar one. You kind of touched on it a little bit. What do you think about that one?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of where I said it's just, it would be really difficult for me to look at things and to think. And your statement earlier, the things that we do know, it only deepens that conviction. You know, it feels like every new thing that I learn about the way the world works, about the way that the body's made, you know, it only deepens that. Oh my goodness! Like, this doesn't just happen. there's just no way. So it makes me really curious, because you said that there were four, and that the last was your fave.
Yeah, it is
which that one seems for me those two.
This next one is about to be the nerdiest one.
Maybe that's why. Maybe it's above me.
And in fact, there's this group of guys that one of them is passed now. There was a group of them that were pretty popular about 10, 15 years ago. They referred to themselves as the Four Horsemen of the New Atheists. And Richard Dawkins is one of them. Christopher Hitchens, he's the guy that passed. Daniel Dennett and Sam Harris. And these are pretty widely known atheists with varying degrees of platforms. And some of them would debate Christians in kind of these, does God exist, evolution kind of deal. And some of them think they're above it. But anyways, they're pretty widely respected in their various fields. And I watched a video that they put together. It was just the four of them. And the question... one of the questions they asked of each other, of all the arguments that theists make to say that God exists, which is the one you find most convincing? It's like, obviously you disagree with it because we're all atheists, but of these arguments, which is the one that you find the most convincing? And it is called, at its simplest, it's just kind of called the fine-tuning argument, that in order for life to exist on Earth, like if the degree to which the Earth was tilted was just even like 0.1 degree off, if it spun any slower, if it spun any faster, if it were any further away from the sun, if it were any closer to the sun, if the elements in the atmosphere were even slightly different, I mean, just all of these different factors, if any of them were even off by even a very small, insignificant amount, life on Earth would be impossible. And the more, and we talked about this in the last episode, the bigger the universe gets, people say, the less likely it is that God exists. But the reality of it is, the more planets we discover, and the more none of them have any life on them, like just don't, not just don't, but can't, the probability that ours exists becomes almost zero. There's practically a 0% chance that our world exists in this universe. It just can't. It's too unlikely. It's one of these things like, well, what are the odds of this? Well, it'd be, it's like if you flipped a coin 100 times in a row and it came up heads every time. I mean, this is like flipping a coin millions of times. And after millions of coin flips, they all are heads. I mean, it is that unlikely that any planet would have all of the conditions that our planet has that allows it to sustain life.
Mm.
And the only argument against that is like, well, it did happen. It did. So because it did, it doesn't happen twice. It only has to happen once, and it did. And of course, we're going to be on the planet where it did because it'd be the only planet that exists. And so it's like, again, like you were talking about earlier, you're talking about probabilities, which is more likely, you know, that there's an almost an all but 0% chance that this world could even exist. What is it likely that someone, again, fine-tuned it in such a way where I want there to be people here, so I'm going to make sure it is exactly at this angle with just these elements spinning at this rate, at this exact distance, or of the, you know, quintillions, just insane. I mean, it's an insane number. People who are interested should just look it up to kind of like you put all of these things together. It's one of these things like any one of them is improbable, makes it almost a 0% chance. But now you're multiplying these things together. And those atheists kind of gave that one the most props. It's probably one of the most difficult to really fully understand, but at its simplest,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. 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 And I was in a conversation this weekend with some guys talking about the eclipse that's coming. And one guy made a statement about the way, like, you know, you think that the world is spinning, but then it's actually kind of got this little wobble to it. And he was trying to explain it. And the whole time I was listening to him explain it, I was just like, man, you know, we just don't spend any time thinking about those things. It feels like if that was what I really focused my attention on, just grasping that. Okay, so this eclipse is going to happen. And all the things around what makes that, you know, most of us are just going to, we're going to have a day where it gets dark.
Right.
And we're going to roll on with our life, you know. So let me ask you this, man. Earlier we were talking about a prof that you had that seemed to, everything about him would say this, but yet he had this really weird belief that didn't seem to match up.
Mm-hmm.
When I think about being a scientist and really digging in deep and understanding a lot of this, wouldn't that lead us? Wouldn't you think that most scientists would be people of faith because they see that what we're talking about and they can't not? So how do you reconcile those things that it seems that
when you interact with or you read the writings of someone who is would call themselves a Christian scientist, they very much jive with what you're saying, right? Of just like, the more I learn, the more deeply I see how this was designed, and the more I want to worship. I think there is a bit of a, you know what a Rorschach inkblot test is? You ever heard of that? Hey, what do you say? This is a butterfly, and it looks like someone murdering their mom. You're like, oh, okay, well, That says something about you rather than the ink blot, right? I think there is, in kind of exploring these kind of scientific issues of like why and how the universe works and how bodies interact with each other or kind of what makes up the structure of an organism or whatever, I think there really is, like, I think you can come at it from either direction. Like, I need to understand how this works because I desperately need there to be an answer other than God.
Right. Your assumption, your beginning assumption before.
Right. And as opposed to, I'm just going to look at this and just as I'm trying to understand how the universe works, let all of this in total speak for itself. Again, because I think the fine-tuning argument speaks for itself. Look, and think about the mathematical probabilities and how many planets and how many universes would have to exist in order for there to just be even one. It is beyond mathematics. Take a moment and think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it does exist. at some point you have to kind of close yourself off. And so I think there is an approach to science where you are so busy looking, you know, you can't see the forest for the trees. I'm just trying to understand and ask and answer these very simplistic questions, these very narrow questions. And I'm so focused on that, I lose sight of the fact that this universe exists at all in the way that it does, and that we exist in a universe that we have the ability to ask and answer these questions, that there is such uniformity and design to it. Take a step back. Mm-hmm. Take a step back. But I do. I think that people, you know, and this is what an atheist, there's somewhere on the other side of the world right now, there's an atheist podcast talking about us saying guys like that, they see what they have to see.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sit here and throw those barbs at each other. I'm like, bro, this is what you have to see. So that's why you see it. And they're like, I'm rubber, you're glue.
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, I could nerd about this all day long. We could have turned this into an episode for each one, but we gotta keep going. So I think we're gonna pause. We're gonna close this one out for now. We're gonna start moving on to some of the other questions. But my guess is, as this happened over the last several series, is that I would imagine that our lovely producer, Abigail, is over there. She's probably already writing down questions that she wants to have asked and answered a little bit later. So we'll probably come back to some of these ideas later. But in our next episode, we're going to move on to what is referred to as the problem of evil. And we're going to spend some time talking about that. So I encourage you to come back and join us. And if you did not catch the episode before this, we kind of talk about more of the personal reasons why we believe God exists. You should go back and watch that as well. And we would love for you to be a part of our church on Sundays as well, whether you live in Northwest Arkansas or not. You can find out all the information at thegrovechurch.org/connect and learn about how you can join our services in person or online. Either way, we would love to know you, help you in any way that we can. Mark, thanks again for joining us, and you guys have a great day.